Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. This video is another daily update on the situation with regards to Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the impact on the global economy. And in today's episode, I want to tell you about further advances that have been made by the Ukrainian forces. And these advances have led to another Russian retreat. And there's now talk about certain generals within the Russian army being disillusioned and not believing that the Russian plan is actually achievable. And as a direct result of all of this, the leader of Russia's Chechnya region has come out and suggested that Russia should now consider using low-yield nuclear weapons. So in today's episode, we'll go through exactly what low-yield nuclear weapons are. Are these baby nukes that Russia could actually start using, or is it something much more serious? I'll give you an update on what's going on with regards to the leaks in the Nord Stream pipelines, and also some positive developments in terms of the European supplies of natural gas. I'll then provide you with an update on what's happening with SoundCloud, and if you're not familiar with SoundCloud, it's a social media platform, but I'll give you some more details later in the video. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summaries to what I think the implications of the latest events are, both for the war and also the global economy, because we're now at a pivotal point in this conflict. Russia have announced the annexation of the four regions that they are occupying, but Ukraine is continuing to make further advances into those areas. And Russia now seems to be losing the war, and there's a real chance that we could see Russia doing something drastic over the course of the next few weeks that could really change these events. And obviously that would have a big impact on the global economy. But before we get into all of the detail, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content. Please subscribe if you haven't done so already. I'm on a push for 200,000 subscribers, getting closer every day. But if you're a regular viewer or even a first-time viewer and you haven't subscribed, please hit that button and help me on that journey. Don't forget, I always include chapters in these videos, so if you don't have time to watch the entire thing from front to back, you can pick and choose which sections you want to watch. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee, Patreon, and Amazon links. And once again, I'd just like to take a moment to say thank you so much to everybody who's given me a Super Thanks, or bought me a coffee, or joined the YouTube membership, or joined Patreon, or even used the Amazon shopping links, because all of this really helps support me as a creator. It's quite tricky making these videos on a regular basis. It's time consuming and I'm really trying to make this a full-time effort. So all of your contributions are really helpful and they also give me a huge amount of encouragement and confirm that I'm on the right track and doing the right sort of thing. So thank you to everybody who has contributed to the channel. Following on from the recent gains that Ukraine have made, whereby they've taken back over 6,000 square kilometers of land, they have now taken the key city of Lyman. Now, this is a stinging setback for Russia only 24 hours after they had their formal ceremony announcing the annexation of the four regions. And the reason that Lyman is important is that it's a key logistics hub for Russia. Russia have confirmed their withdrawal from Lyman in a televised posting.
Despite the losses and having a significant superiority in forces, the enemy brought in reserves and continued the offensive in this direction. Due to the threat of encirclement, the Allied troops were withdrawn from the settlement of Lyman to more advantageous lines.
No details of the losses have been released, but it's expected that Russia encountered heavy casualties as they had around 5,500 troops in the area prior to Ukraine winning it back. Russian forces have been in occupation in Lyman since May and had been using this area as a key logistics and transport hub. So its loss will be really damaging to the future progress of Russia's forces in this area. Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky posted a video clip on Telegram confirming that the town of Lyman had been fully cleared of Russian soldiers. So what we're seeing here is a continuation of the trend that we've seen for the last 3 or 4 weeks of Ukrainian forces starting to win their battles against Russia. The red section on this map shows the areas of Ukraine that are currently occupied by Russian troops. And the pink section at the top shows all of the ground that Ukraine has recovered in recent weeks. So you can see that there is a large swathe of land that they've taken. And as I mentioned, the town of Lyman was being used predominantly by the Russians as a way of providing logistics and support to all of the area in the north. And the longer that this war goes on, the more ground that Ukraine is winning and the more pressure the Russian forces are coming under. Now, in direct response to the news of the retreat and in order to provide some form of morale boost, Russia has announced that it's destroyed 7 missile and artillery depots in the key regions. They also claim that the air defense radar for the S-300 missile system being used by Ukraine has also been destroyed. Ramzan Kadyrov is the head of Russia's region of Chechnya, and he's been particularly unimpressed with the recent defeats and retreats that Russia have encountered in Ukraine. Now, if you follow the channel, you'll be aware that Chechnya is an area that Russia has been involved in military conflict in the past. It declared its independence at the time of the breakup of the Soviet Union in the early 90s. However, in a similar way to what's happening in Ukraine now, Russia believed that the citizens of Chechnya actually wanted to be part of Russia, and they started two wars, one in the 90s and one in 2000, the second of which lasted for almost 9 years. And the area is now considered to be part of Russia, and the head of this region is obviously familiar with military conflict, terrorism, and dealing with insurgents. Directly following Russia's retreat from Lyman, Kadyrov posted a message on Telegram. In his message, Kadyrov described Colonel General Alexander Lapin, commander of the Russian forces fighting at Lyman, as a mediocrity and suggested that he should be demoted to private and stripped of his medals. Due to a lack of elementary military logistics today, we have abandoned several settlements and a large piece of territory, he said. He said that only 2 weeks ago he'd raised the possibility of a defeat at Lyman with Russia's chief of general staff, but that the idea had been dismissed. He stated that he would be forced to go to the country's leadership to explain to them the situation on the ground unless urgent changes were made in the conduct of the war. But most concerning of all, he stated, in my personal opinion, more drastic measures should be taken, right up to the declaration of martial law in the border areas and the use of low-yield nuclear weapons. Now, obviously, we've heard talk of the potential use of nuclear weapons from President Putin already. But what is concerning here is that Kadyrov is very close to Putin. In fact, President Putin installed him directly in 2007 to get a hold of what was happening in Chechnya. And Chechnya is still encountering troubles and insurgents and terrorist activity. So this is a guy who's been put into place to get control of a war zone. And he's come out and said that he believes that low-yield nuclear weapons should be used to get control of what's happening in Ukraine. Now, the last thing that we all need is anybody encouraging President Putin to go and press the red button. But we've got one of his leaders here who's pointing out the deficiencies of the existing leaders of the military and saying that in order to take back control, we need to use nuclear weapons. So it's been suggested that Russia should use low-yield nuclear weapons in order to win the war in Ukraine. And you may be thinking, well, low-yield nuclear weapons, that doesn't actually sound too bad. If they're baby nukes, then maybe they're okay. And so I thought it was worth having a talk about what a low-yield nuclear weapon is and how it compares to other weaponry. In terms of measuring how destructive a bomb is, you can measure the amount of TNT explosive power that's contained within that bomb. Now, a standard bomb that you'll have seen dropped out of planes in footage has around 500 pounds of TNT explosive within it. And a 500-pound bomb will cause a significant amount of damage when it detonates. So before we go on to talk about low-yield nuclear bombs, let's talk about the biggest bomb that's ever been made and detonated. The largest conventional bomb that has ever been used in warfare was dropped on a reported ISIS camp in Afghanistan in 2017 during the Donald Trump presidency. This bomb, which was named the Mother of All Bombs, or MOAB, contained 11 tons of TNT explosives. So it was around 50 times larger than a standard bomb. And the Mother of All Bombs, when it was dropped in Afghanistan, caused widespread destruction and blew up a lot of the underground caves that ISIS were using at that time. So let's talk about a low-yield nuclear bomb. A low-yield nuclear bomb will contain at least 1 kiloton of TNT explosive. So that's 1,000 tons of TNT. Now, the Mother of All Bombs contained 11 tons of TNT. So that means that the smallest low-yield nuclear bomb contains around 100 times more explosive than the Mother of All Bombs. But low-yield nuclear weapons can refer to bombs that are up to 50 kilotons. So that would be about 5,000 times bigger than the Mother of All Bombs. And to put this into perspective and to really give you an understanding as to how devastating a low-yield nuclear bomb would be, the two bombs that were dropped by the USA over Nagasaki and Hiroshima at the end of World War II were low-yield nuclear weapons at the bottom end of the range that I've just talked you through. And I'm sure you'll have read in the history books or seen the footage of the amount of damage that was inflicted by both of those two bombs. So the low-yield nuclear bombs that the head of Chechnya is suggesting Russia should use in the Ukraine war would be as devastating as those two bombs which ended World War II. So this would be utter devastation. You would see thousands of people dying as a result of these bombs being detonated. So this isn't a low-yield, small baby nuke. This is actually as big as any nuclear bombs that have actually been used in warfare. So the reason I wanted to talk through this is so that nobody would be misled by the term low-yield nuclear bomb. That's actually an oxymoron. It's a contradiction in terms. You can't have a low-yield nuclear bomb. It may be the smallest of all nuclear bombs, but it's still going to have devastating impact. So if Russia do decide to use any sort of nuclear weapons, whether it be low yield, medium yield, high yield, that would constitute a nuclear strike, and then there would be some serious consequences. And I talked about this recently in another video, and we looked at the four different options that the West has in front of it in the event that Russia does deploy a nuclear strike. President Putin, as part of the speech that he gave for the annexation of the four regions of Ukraine, suggested that Ukraine should now stop all warfare and come round the table to talk about a peace settlement. But obviously this peace settlement is focused on handing over these four regions to Russia on a permanent basis, which Ukraine and the West are not agreeing to. They don't see these referenda as having any legality. And in terms of supporting the war effort, Joe Biden recently approved an additional $1.1 billion worth of financial support. And Germany, Denmark, and Norway have all confirmed that they will be providing more military equipment to support Ukraine's offensive. The $1.1 billion of additional security assistance from the USA brings the total commitment to more than $16.2 billion since late February. The latest US security package consists of 18 high-mobility artillery rocket systems, as well as munitions for those systems, 150 armoured multipurpose vehicles, 150 tactical vehicles, 40 trucks and 80 trailers to transport heavy equipment, 2 radars for unmanned aerial systems, 20 multi-mission radars, as well as secure communication systems and body armour. Germany has confirmed it will deliver the first of 4 advanced IRST air defence systems to Ukraine in the coming days to help ward off drone attacks. These systems cost around $150 million per piece, and therefore Germany's commitment is an additional $600 million. In addition, Germany, Denmark and Norway have committed to provide 16 Slovak Zuzana 2 howitzers, which are able to fire 6 projectiles per minute over a distance of 40 kilometres. The financial cost of these systems is around $90 million. So I think it's really interesting to note that Ukraine are receiving some serious financial support, and they're now making a lot of progress in terms of winning back a lot of the ground. And as Russia starts to lose ground, President Putin is now coming out and saying that he wants to talk about a peace agreement, but only on his terms, only if those four regions are handed over to Russia. And clearly that is a non-starter from Ukraine's perspective. So we're not going to see any end to the fighting anytime soon, but rather it's more likely that we will see Ukraine increasing their efforts. And it will be very interesting to see what Russia's response to that is, because they are starting to lose this war. The United Nations has stated that the Nord Stream gas leaks could be the largest single release of methane gas ever to have occurred. Now, this is a topic that I covered in more detail in a recent video, but the issue with regards to the release of methane is that it contributes to global warming. A huge plume of highly concentrated methane, a greenhouse gas far more potent but shorter lived than carbon dioxide, was detected in analysis this week of satellite imagery by researchers associated with UNEP's International Methane Emissions Observatory. Researchers estimated that the leak rate from one of the 4 rupture points was 22,920 kilograms per hour, which is the equivalent to burning around 630,000 pounds of coal every hour. The total amount of methane leaking from the Nord Stream pipelines may be higher than that from a major leak that occurred in December from offshore oil and gas fields in Mexican waters off the Gulf of Mexico, which spilled around 100 metric tons of methane per hour. Denmark's energy agency has announced that one of the 2 ruptured pipelines in the Baltic Sea now appears to have stopped leaking natural gas. and it's been advised that the pressure within the Nord Stream 2 pipeline has stabilised, indicating that gas is no longer escaping. So a lot of natural gas has now been lost forever into the atmosphere. But on the plus side, we've seen two major developments in terms of the European supplies of natural gas. This map shows the Baltic Pipe project that Norway has been developing to provide gas supplies directly to Poland. This pipeline is at the centre of Poland's strategy to diversify its gas supplies away from Russia that began years before Moscow's February invasion of Ukraine. The pipeline has an annual capacity of 10 billion cubic metres and was officially inaugurated on the same day that the leaks were discovered in the Nord Stream pipelines. Gas supplies officially started flowing directly from Norway to Poland on the 1st of October, and this is a major development for Poland and should ensure that the country has sufficient supplies all the way through the winter period. Now, as you may be aware, at exactly the same time as Poland had its gas supplies switched off by Russia, Bulgaria also had all of its supplies cut. And as Bulgaria is a landlocked country, this has caused major problems because it's difficult to be able to replace those supplies with LNG because they don't have any water to be able to have these floating facilities. This map shows the Greek interconnector gas pipeline, and you can see that a branch has been developed directly to Bulgaria. The 182-kilometre pipeline has now been completed, and on the 1st of October, Bulgaria started to receive its first supplies of Azerbaijani gas. The pipeline has an initial capacity of 3 billion cubic metres per year, but plans are in place to increase this to 5 billion cubic metres, and the pipeline could also provide gas to neighbouring countries of Serbia, North Macedonia, Romania, Moldova, and Ukraine. The total cost of this pipeline was around $235 million and was funded as a joint venture between Bulgaria, Greece, and Italy. So the opening of both of these pipelines represents a major step forward in terms of Europe's move away from its dependence on Russian gas. Following the invasion of Ukraine, the Russian authorities clamped down on a variety of different social media to stop messages being able to be spread. So Facebook was banned, so was Instagram, and access to all overseas content and new content was banned for TikTok. And the latest platform to fall victim to this censorship is SoundCloud. Now, you may not be familiar with SoundCloud, but this is a platform that has over 175 million users worldwide and is used predominantly by creators of music to upload their material. So a lot of independent artists will use this as a medium of being able to distribute their work without having to pay large amounts of money. And it's just been announced that Russia has now restricted access to SoundCloud service in connection with placements of materials containing false information regarding the nature of the special military operation on the territory of Ukraine. It said access to the service was blocked at the behest of the Russian Prosecutor General's office, adding that the information in question related to the special operations form and methods of warfare, including attacks on civilians, strikes on civilian infrastructure, and about numerous civilian casualties at the hands of Russian soldiers. So what we're seeing here is a further Russian clampdown on all forms of social media and the spread of information. So a lot of control is now being exerted directly by the Russian authorities on the freedom of speech. And that really isn't a healthy thing for any society. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, if you follow the channel, you'll know that I focus predominantly on the financial impacts of this war. I'm trying to tell you what the implications for you and your life and your family might be in terms of what's happening over in Ukraine. And what we're seeing at the moment is a heightening of the warfare. And we're starting to see the balance of power shifting away from Russia towards Ukraine. So Ukraine are making all of the advances. They're getting all of the wins in terms of taking new territory. They're pushing Russia back, and Russia is having to retreat, and it's losing ground on a daily basis. Now, Russia recently announced that they've annexed all of these zones. And the implication of that is that Russia now considers this land to be part of Russia. So they deem any attacks that Ukraine are making in these territories as an invasion of Russia, which is obviously a slightly perverse logic because this previously was Ukraine and now they're saying that it's part of Russia. But if we park that political debate to one side for a moment, from Russia's perspective, they believe that they are now justified in any means necessary on defending this land. And the fact that the leader of the Russian forces in Chechnya has come out and dismissed all of the efforts of the generals in these areas and said that Russia needs to up its game and do something about this. And he's put forward a proposal that Russia should now use low-yield nuclear weapons. Now, as you'll be aware, this is a threat that President Putin has made himself. And he's now got one of his right-hand men saying that now is the time to push that button. So we've got two senior people on the Russian side of life talking about the potential for a nuclear threat. Now, as we discussed earlier in the video, there is no such thing as a low-yield nuclear bomb. This will be devastating. If Russia does deploy one of these weapons, it will potentially cause World War III, because it's quite likely at that point that we will see Europe and the USA wanting to retaliate. And the most obvious form of retaliation would be to set off another nuclear bomb. So we're starting to see a really big escalation in terms of this war. Russia is losing the war, and President Putin may decide to do something drastic to try to get the balance of power back into Russia's favour. Now, quite clearly, this is the worst case scenario. The last thing that any of us want is a nuclear war. But Russia is up against it at the moment. They are coming under constant attack. And Ukraine is being really well funded. It's receiving cash and military support on a daily basis. So Ukraine have got the upper hand right now. And it will be really interesting to see what happens in the course of the war over the next couple of weeks. President Putin has offered to talk about a peace settlement, but only on Russia's terms. And those terms include Ukraine handing over these four territories on a permanent basis. Ukraine is not going to do that. And interestingly, I saw a report this week that Ukraine is now talking about whether or not they may be able to take back Crimea. So not just take back the four areas that Russia have invaded over the last 7 months, but actually try to retake the territory that was annexed back in 2014, 8 years ago. So Ukraine is definitely not thinking about any form of peace settlement right now. So it doesn't look like we're going to see an end to this war anytime soon. And of course, that is really bad news for the global economy. As we've discussed before, the impact of this war on the global economy is a lot of volatility. We've seen the markets moving around all over the place, but generally going down. We've seen currency rates moving all over the place, but generally the dollar is going up and most of the currencies are going down. And we're seeing the cost of a lot of things rising. So the cost of fuel and commodities and food have gone up significantly. And that's putting pressure on everybody. So we've got high inflation in most countries around the world. We've got rising interest rates, which is equally putting more pressure on people. And it's very likely that we will see the world tipping into recession at the start of 2023. If it does turn out that this war is going to last for a number of years, which it possibly could do, that's what we saw in Chechnya in 2000. That war went on for 9 years with Russia behind it. If it does go on well into 2023, then we will see things continuing to get worse. We are not going to see the economy bouncing back until this war is finished. And that's what President Putin is hoping for. He knows that he's causing economic chaos in a lot of countries around the world. And he wants to keep that going because he believes that it will lead to a peace settlement, that at some point NATO will say, enough's enough, we can't afford this war to go on any longer, please draw a conclusion to it. But it's unlikely that Ukraine is going to hand over that land, and it's unlikely that Russia is going to withdraw from these territories. So we've got a complete Mexican standoff in terms of the two viewpoints, and that's going to make a peace settlement really, really difficult. So unfortunately, the outlook as it stands right now is that we're going to see the global economy coming down in terms of its total value. And unless this war finishes, I don't see any end to that process. We're going to see a gradual erosion in the value of global GDP until we get some sort of resolution. So sorry to be the bearer of bad news once again, but unfortunately, talk of a potential nuclear strike by Russia would cause an escalation of this war, and that would be extremely bad news for the global economy. So hopefully you found today's episode interesting, informative, and thought-provoking. If you've liked what I've said, please give me a thumbs up, and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.